B-Pod Studios.
Five Sports Up with Toucher and Rich. Will Brinson is a senior NFL writer for CBSSports.com. He also hosts the Daily Six podcast, or Daily Pick Six podcast, sorry. And he joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Mr. Brinson, hello.
Morning. How you guys doing?
Every day is a miracle. Every day is fantastic.
By the way, Will Brinson, another guest of the Just Sitting There podcast with Joe Murray, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. Attaboy.
Yeah. Long chat with Joe on Monday, whatever, I guess days exist still. We did a little video thing, talked some football, talked some draft, talked some career path stuff. It's fun. It's a good talk.
In terms of what with career path?
He's asking how I got into sports writing.
Yeah, I think Joe's chomping at the bit a little bit. I think Joe wants to get out while the getting's good. But unfortunately, we're in a pandemic. But all right. So Rich was just talking about it. What are you hearing? What do you think the likelihood of the NFL starting a month later is?
Well, I think I'm still on the board that they're 100% there's going to be a season. Right. I just think there's going to be. I do have concerns. I don't want to make this my concern with what Georgia and Florida and Texas are doing right now with the reopening. And look, I'm not a scientist. I'm not claiming that something's definitely going to happen. But when you reopen, you run the risk of a spike in cases. The risk is just there. Whether or not it happens remains to be seen. And if that happens, I'm worried that it could really push everything back. So that's that. I think that is what we need to see over the next 2 weeks. Like, I don't even think it matters until the middle of May. Once things start to open back up in some of these states, we have to see what happens when things are open back up with the cases of corona before we can even have a discussion about the NFL season. Because if they don't spike. And look, the people in Georgia and Florida, they're idiots. If there's two states that are going to find a way to screw something up, it's Georgia and Florida. So
right, right.
If they can open back up and the cases don't spike, then I think we should feel at least optimistic about things starting to get going from a sports perspective, you know, especially in the fall.
Now, that's a great point, too. They're kind of – they have the potential to blow it for the rest of us, don't they? So everyone's going to see if, you know, because, I mean, it's going to take about a little over a month to find out just how bad it was, because you won't see the spikes for about a month after they open everything back up. And you're right. If you see that, then there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be hesitant not only about opening things back up to the amount that they wanted, but all these leagues are going to go, guys – I don't know how we can possibly plan this if we're seeing that if everyone's – even if they move it back to like, you know, September or, you know, August to open everything back up, that there'll be a spike in the middle of the season and they'll have to stop it in the middle of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I mean, look, if you – I mean, and again, not a scientist, have read Wikipedia, but if you know anything about the 1918 Spanish flu, you know that the deadliest month of the entire pandemic was in October 1918, because when the flu came raging back and spiked again. Now we got much better science and doctors and everything, so hopefully, you know, we can come up with some antibody tests and some vaccine tests, and it's entirely possible that anyway, it's a whole thing down the road. But I would not be surprised at all if the NFL started later. But I think that they really want to try to go on. I think what they're trying to do is to have these scheduling guys, and maybe the SVJ covered this, but to go like build out every contingency. There is no reason to get caught, you know, being lazy with how you build out these contingencies. And one of the things in that article too, they're a little worried that if they announce the schedule on May 7th, that it will be perceived as a, I think the phrase is power play against Gavin Newsom.
Oh,
yeah, like
come
on. Like they don't want Gavin Newsom to think that they're being like, we're coming to you. State in the fall, pal.
They've got to have a plan. And even Gavin Newsom, who obviously has been very gung-ho on making sure that he keeps the state closed until he feels that it's safe, which I'm erring on the side of guys like him. But you have to understand, this is a massive business, and all of these things can change. You have to release a schedule just in case. And I guarantee you the NFL, when they release it, is going to say something or going to make some release that, you know, this is obviously subject to change. And in the schedule, too, if I'm not mistaken, Will, they're going to arrange it so there are certain games at the end that if they have to be if they have to get rid of them, then they can. Or it's the beginning of the season. Is it like end heavy or top heavy on the schedule so they can alter it if they have to?
Yeah, they're going to put all the Redskins games at the back end so that way they don't have to.
Can you imagine being in Virginia? Hachi Machi. Talk about living under a black cloud. That guy's just like, that guy's just like, we're never, the governor there is like, we're never coming back. He's like basically maybe for 2 years he said that. You're just like, oh, okay, well that's great, perfect. And by the way, Gavin Newsom is seeing that his state's already going stir crazy, so maybe he should relax a little bit. But continue.
I gotta look at this Virginia governor. It's right. It's an hour north of me. I can't believe I didn't realize. I guess my buddy lives up there, and he said that they're on lockdown until or on shelter in place until like June 1 already. I mean, they're doing what we did May. I think we did May 1st, and then they canceled school. But that's no surprise. I think that the NFL is going to. What they need to do is push the schedule back to like June. These states are going to open up. We're going to have some kind of information about what's going on by like May 15th or May 21st. So kick the schedule back a month, spend some more time working on these contingencies and just be patient with it. Now, I mean, I wonder too, like at what point do you say we may play without fans? I don't think you say it now, but I mean, like, I think you have to at least, or, you know, like, we're not going to have full stadiums, right? I can't imagine we have full stadiums.
You can't sit people far away from each other because there are people that are in line to get in. There are people that are in line to go to the bathroom. I mean, you can't have fans in the stands. It's all or nothing.
If they were desperate enough, they could. And what it would be is that they would space people out. And then they would do the 6-foot thing. Now it might take 75 hours to get into a stadium, but I mean, if they were hell bent on it, which I don't think they would be, because I think it's impractical. But it's not ridiculous to think that you could have an event where you separated people. But I mean, it would be very difficult and very. Wouldn't it be the greatest spectator experience in the world?
It would be so weird to have. Like every 6 seats, there's one person. I do wonder, like, how this is going to change the long term future of stadium layouts. You know,
temperature checks are probably going to be a realistic thing, like going into stadiums. I could see that in the future.
Yeah, like a scan, or like you like here's a like the guy who's checking your ticket hands you a thermometer, and you got to see if you got the flu.
Right. Yeah, put it on your head. Just like they scan a ticket, they could probably put something on your head that takes like a second or two to get your
rectal thermometer.
Perfect.
I'll stay in the parking lot and drink beer. Thanks. Yeah.
All right. So from an outsider, you know, someone who doesn't live here in the New England region, there is there's a contingent of people who think that. Maybe the plan for Bill Belichick, just judging by some of the picks that he did and did not make and looking at some of the moves, is that maybe this is a tank for Trevor situation. I think Jason Lockenfora is kind of waving the flag on that one. What do you think? Do you think that is something that Bill Belichick's DNA would ever allow to happen?
Yeah, JLC floated that on my podcast a few weeks ago. It's fascinating. I mean, I don't think it's impossible. But I don't think it's likely. I don't think Belichick knows how to coach to lose.
Miami couldn't do it. So given the talent that they have, especially defensively, how would you go about having Trey one Gilmore. Of the five? Yeah, Trey Gilmore for the next Andrew Luck. So
You just can't do it. You can't tank unless you are. I mean, I guess in theory, if there was a team that could tank, it would be the Patriots because Belichick's the coach and the GM. You know what I'm saying? Because usually, like, there's the coach and the GM are not aligned on that because the coach is like, "Not, I'm not going 0-16. I'll get fired." And it almost never happens. Here's what I think the Patriots. First of all, I think they like Jared Stidham. Second of all, I think Bill Belichick, who is an economist at heart, looked at what was going on with the quarterback market in the draft and the quarterback market in free agency, and he said, "Okay, we're going into the draft. We have our board. If we get with one of these quarterbacks that we have on our board at these particular spots lands to us at a point of value, we will consider taking them. If not, we're going to come out of the draft and, you know, Jameis Winston, Cam Newton, and potentially Andy Dalton at some point will be available to sign after Monday's compensatory pick deadline. And you know what? Maybe we'll just roll a Stidham and I'll tell everyone to F off." And I mean, like, I really think that might be the case. I think he might believe in his ability to win with Jared Stidham. And look, I think when you're at 23 and Jordan Love goes at 26 and you trade out of 23, I mean, that's a message. It's some kind of, I'm more than taking Jordan Love, you num-nums, like, or dum-dums, whatever, numbskulls, whatever you want to call it. It's not directly, a sign that he, you know, was thinking about Love, but like he had a chance to take the quarterback there and he didn't do it. He traded out of the spot. To me, I think he's comfortable with what he's got. And again, maybe he knows that we've got some time here, you know, maybe he knows that this is not, it's also a case where I firmly believe that teams who have consistency at offensive coordinator, head coach, quarterback, and the offensive line position will be at a substantial advantage in 2020 versus teams who are making changes at those spots, because we're not going to have off-season training activities and we don't know exactly what's going to happen with training camp.
Yeah, because Lockenfour also said that, you know, that he was an economist at heart, that there were teams that wouldn't be interested in Trevor Lawrence. But when I look, I mean, I think a lot of teams would be willing to say F you to their own quarterback if Trevor Lawrence was available.
Yeah, I mean, I think Lockenfour's point is that the market is a little bit saturated. I mean, it is saturated with quarterbacks. Like Cam Newton, 2015 MVP, can't get a job. Trevor Lawrence is the best quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck. This dude is unbelievable. Everybody's watched a lot of him. He plays at Clemson. He, you know, was in the last two national title games. But, I mean, like, you know, he kicks NC State's ass every year. And so I watched a lot of Trevor Lawrence, and I mean, he is good, man.
Yeah. All right. So real quick before we let you go, Cam Newton, that's also a name that keeps floating around for – you know, possibly being a Patriot. Matter of fact, Vegas has him at like a minus 140 or something crazy like that. What do you think? You think that would ever happen?
I think it could happen. It's just Kansas is a tough spot because he wants, like, if Belichick wants to go in on Stidham and he really thinks that Stidham can be his guy, like, you could bring Andy Dalton in and Andy Dalton ain't rocking the boat. But if you bring Cam in, Cam's going to want, at the very least, a chance to earn a starting job. I mean, and the problem for him is there just aren't many of those chances out there. If you're a team with a young quarterback, I mean, even like the Jaguars, right, with Gardner Minshew, if they want to give Gardner Minshew a chance, I mean, the worst thing you can do is bring Cam Newton in, because it's not because you might lose the competition and you might have to start Cam, but like there's just going to be an unholy amount of scrutiny on that position and on that battle. And this kid's going to have to answer, you know, same thing with the Redskins. Like, you bring him into Washington, he's going to have to answer questions instead of just focusing on winning the job and playing well.
All right. Well, listen, there you go. Will Brinson, the Pick 6 podcast, coming every day over there at CBSSports.com. And you can read him there as well. Mr. Brinson, thank you as always.
Always fun, guys. Talk to you later.
Let's see Will.
And he just sitting there with Joe Murray.
I always seem to tune in on Facebook when he's doing that. I guess at noon is when I must use the restroom in that hour, because I always go in that. I always get caught in the middle of watching one of the things, and I'm like, yeah. And every once in a while, I'll drop in a little comment, and then, you know, after I flush, I'm done. So I watch for about 3 to 4 minutes, or sometimes 7 to 8 if the fiber's high.
All right, very good. All right, we'll be right back.
105, the Sports Hub.
The fact that I have to sit here today and Jalen, Chris Webber, Steve Smith, who I work with, the hurt that those guys feel for me having to be in this moment, I apologize to them in Detroit for all of us in this moment.
Why are you apologizing for Detroit? To Detroit? Why are you apologizing to Weber and Rose because they're from Detroit?
He drives me crazy. So that's Isaiah Thomas. If you watch the Jordan documentary, you know, they had the part where they didn't shake their hands and Lambeer was the one who obviously told them not to do it and they walked off the court. You know what you do if today somebody asks you about it? You go, yeah, we hated those guys. Yep. Did you see the way that we lost? We got swept. I was pissed. And you know what? No one would blame you. You looked like a dick at the time, sure. But now, like years later, you can laugh about it and go, yeah, I hated them.
Well, it was sure. So personal, too. Because the Bulls had been crying about how the Pistons weren't deserving champions because they were so cheap and all these things. So the Pistons had been hearing that for a year and a half, so they were like, screw you.
Yeah, now, so there's certain times where you just have to chalk
way,
things
people
up.
In Detroit loved it. So it's not, well, I don't know why you're apologizing to Detroit and Weber and Rose. Like, what did you do to Weber and Rose?
Oh, dude, I don't care. Because they're constantly asked about it. And by the way, Rose was sitting there. I think he was there. He was sitting there shaking his head, like going, like, are you kidding me? So this is great. Bill Lambeer was asked about it. And there was no one more hateable in the NBA than Bill Lambeer. But at least this guy, like, calls it for what it is. He was being asked about this on The Jump yesterday, and here's what he had to say.
They whined and cried for a year and a half about how bad we were for the game. But more importantly, they were bad people. We weren't bad people. We were just basketball players winning. And that kind of stuck with me because they didn't know who we were or what we were about as individuals in our family life. So all that whining they did, why shake their hand? They were just whiners. They won the series. Give them credit. We got old. They got past us, but okay, move on.
Great. That's the perfect response. Or like even, I mean, if you're still like angry about it, well, it sounds like, you know, Lambeer is like, all right, screw you. Yeah, we hated him. I like that there's still the animosity, but even if you don't, just be like, yeah, we hated him, man. I mean, I still kind of hate him too. The respect level for a guy like Lambeer that I have, who just calls it as it is, instead of Isaiah Thomas, who is trying to like be everything to everyone, is infuriating. And that's exactly the way he was with the Knicks. Like when he ran the Knicks, he was like such a kiss ass and such a backstabber behind the scenes. And just his attitude and the way he's so smarmy about everything, he infuriates me. And he has not learned his lesson.
Wasn't there more to this than just that particular series? I seem to remember a story back when Jordan was a rookie that Isaiah organized a freeze out of Jordan in the All-Star game. Yeah. Now I think that was 85 or 86. And then don't forget when the Dream Team got together, Jordan said, Isaiah's not on this team or I'm not playing. Something right. Along those lines. I mean, yes. It's been back and forth since the mid-80s, let alone that one series where the Bulls got pissed that the Pistons didn't shake their hands in 91.
Yeah, I mean, Isaiah Thomas was very petty, and then Jordan was very petty. And even going to the Piston games, I hated Lambeer. He's just this rich kid that went to Notre Dame that was snotty and had a weird shot. I couldn't stand Lambeer. I didn't even like those Pistons teams. They were boring.
Well, we hated them here, Fred. Trust me. We couldn't stand them.
I mean, looking back on it, it's kind of funny how much they fought. But being there was really boring. It was an exceptionally boring style of basketball. Now, you're seeing highlights of, you know, the times where it got super physical. And in the playoffs, it got interesting. But, I mean, on one side, you had to – I mean, who are you going to like if you're a kid? The Pistons or the Lakers?
Right, a team that's got dynamic offense and great shooters. Right, I mean, of course.
Yeah, no, a team that's constantly fast breaking with one of the best point guards of all time. Well, I mean, Isaiah is too, but I mean, one was a defensive team, a great defensive team, and that was the Pistons, and the other one was a fantastic offensive team. So when you're a kid, I mean, that's what I liked. I liked the Lakers because, I mean, I didn't like have their clothes and stuff. But if you ask me, and I went to 20 Piston games a year, but if you ask me, What I would prefer to watch would be the Lakers.
Well, also, on top of that, Isaiah Thomas was dishonest about how the reason that they had done it was because the Celtics had done the same thing to them when, you know, they had beaten them. And, I mean, you heard, you know, we had Forsberg on, and everyone's – it's a well-known story. I mean, that crowd at the Silverdome looked like they were about to rush the floor, and there's an article in today's Boston Globe where they got a staffer who I guess was
John Jennings, who was a scout back then and then was an assistant coach after that.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, John.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, I to be quite honest, I didn't know who it was either.
Well,
I saw his name.
But Johnny's right there. He knows how what's going on. He's in the building.
Hey. That was his idea. He had a poster of that guy on his wall when he was a kid.
John Jennings.
Good guy. Say, what do you want
from
he's me?
Got a picture of the video guy.
Yeah.
He's got a big poster of him in front of a TV with a remote in his hand.
Just so you know, it wasn't a fan they talked to. It was a guy who was an employee that was sitting in the building at the time.
What is that? Staffer? I said he was a staffer.
Okay. My apologies, fellas.
No, I like the fact that you knew it. It's the nerdiest thing that's ever been said on this show.
He had a bust of Bill James, and he had all the video staffers for the various teams, posters of them.
I was a big fan. Most people that went to college had like pictures of Bird. Not me. No. Nope.
Can you sign my chest, sir? Please.
That's right.
Tattoo later on. Well, he basically is just the same thing Forsberg said. He goes, what Isaiah said just simply isn't true. He goes, I was sitting right behind the head coach at the time. He says those players ultimately left the court before the final buzzer. He goes, Casey and the assistant coaches Jimmy Rogers and Chris Ford were all talking about getting the guys off the floor because we were in the Silverdome, and you could just tell these folks were ready to storm the court. That is honest to goodness what it was all about. It had nothing whatsoever with trying to show up the Pistons or a lack of sportsmanship. He goes, it was really the safety. He said, I remember KC pointing at the guys going down the bench and saying, okay, go to the locker room. And meanwhile, it happened. I mean, that's the thing. Like, his prediction came true. They came down to the court. So,
by the way, if you want to feel better, John Wallach, I can tell you who the trainer for those Piston teams were.
Go right ahead. I can tell you who the trainer for the Celtics teams were. Let's
Mike
go.
Mike Abdenauer. Because then they go, trainer Mike Abdenauer.
That's right. And when they used to introduce the Celtics, it was trainer of the Celtics is Ed Lassert. Yeah. I know exactly. Yeah.
There
Ed
you
Lassert.
Go.
Yeah.
Young wannabe medicine man.
That's right.
Young John Wallach. When I was at Isaiah Thomas basketball camp one time, I got afraid and homesick. And so I went to Mike Abdenauer, was the guy there, and I said that I didn't feel good, and he didn't care. All right. at all. All right. But, I mean, he's a man who's a trainer for a Piston team.
Sure.
All right. I mean, why care about the kids at the camp? All right. Rich, what do we have coming up? I mean, we have something called the stack. What are we going to talk about?
Well, the coronavirus has completely changed what the upcoming television schedule is going to look like.
All right. We'll have that for you in just a moment.
The games are only half of it. Thatcher and Rich. 98.5. Sports Hub.
Now it's time to get to the stuff that we couldn't get to. It's the stack.
Now you get 5 to Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich. Rich, what is going on?
Well, TV's going to be...
Well, I'm sorry. I got to give you the sponsor. I apologize.
Sponsor me.
The stack is sponsored by Window Nation. It's Window Nation's buy two, get two free sale. No down payment, no payments, and 0% financing for 12 full months. Go to windownation.com.
We're going to get a mixed bag when it comes to television that's going to be coming up for the next several months. Fred, you said it yesterday, because there's a lot of different television shows that right now would have been filming that are not going to be. So that means at some point, you know, the bill's going to have to get due, and there's the shows that are normally going to air and seasons like that we're supposed to pick up, and you're going to have a bunch of unproduced television shows. So what are you going to do when these people can't get together and produce new content? Here's some ideas. As a matter of fact, ESPN right now, according to Yahoo, is nearing an agreement to air South Korean baseball games during the coronavirus pandemic. Of course, all of us are probably saying, why would you do that? But who knows? Maybe after a month or so, we might be huge fans of the Yon Hap, what do they call it? I can't even write the
name. Why don't they just put
teams.
Snow on? Like, why don't they just put snow on?
I don't know.
You know what, dude? Go to, like, a place that's open, like Montana, and just have people like play putt-putt and drive like dune buggies and do stuff like that. I'd much rather watch that than, I mean, like Montana's got like, has had like 14 deaths. I mean, they're opening up. Just have, do the Ocho.
Yeah.
Just do the Ocho from Montana. Or just have them do it now. I mean, you can go to Montana. I mean, have, what, 50 people go to Montana where there's no one's got it. And then have
Fred, yeah, log flipping is the ultimate social distancing sport.
Absolutely it is. Just get out of the way. I'm telling you. I do that thing in Scotland where they roll down the hill. Chasing a wheel of cheese.
You know, the guy's pulling the trucks with chains. You don't need a ton of people around you.
No.
Give me the strongman competition all day. Absolutely.
Yep. Magnus von Magnussen.
Have them go to Montana. Listen, they probably have 5 billion testing kits there because they haven't had to use any. Get them tested for the coronavirus. If they don't have it, they're not getting it. Yeah. So just have them go there and screw and do the Ocho. And I'm being dead serious. I'd much rather watch that. I mean, I wouldn't watch it like, you know, more than, you know, probably a total of 2 hours in my lifetime. But, I mean, I'd certainly watch it more than Korean, South Korean baseball. I wonder why they're not showing North Korean baseball. It's hard to figure out.
I don't know. I'm not quite sure. But I do know that one thing that did change over the past draft was everyone's home and there's cameras everywhere. And who would have expected the response was through the roof? I mean, it was almost universally loved. And as a matter of fact, the NFL is looking at this and going, how are we going to possibly go back to what we did before when people truly liked the inside look at these coaches and these players and where they live and their families? So it sounds like they're kind of going to meet them halfway. As a matter of fact, according to a report yesterday, the NFL Executive Vice President Peter O'Neill told Ian Rappaport that the traditional green room is going to stay for some prospects who choose to attend the draft, but they are going to encourage and provide more phone cameras that are going to be put in the homes of prospects who don't. As a matter of fact, I think that they might just try to draw back on the amount of people who were there because so many people liked it so much. As a matter of fact, they were so happy with how it went. First of all, they were happy that there were no technical breakdowns. They never had to stop the clock, and that's really the only real issues that they were worried about. As far as someone not being ready on camera or something like that, there weren't even that many of them. But the green room thing, I'm completely fine with getting rid of the super long interview afterwards, the bringing them out, everyone at the table. I like seeing them in their natural environment, these teams and the families. I like the father falling off the couch, all of those moments with the girlfriend stealing the phone.
You don't get Geno Smith, though. You don't get an Aaron Rodgers. You don't get like people having to sit there. I will say this, though, is that ESPN has been forthright in their explaining of in admitting, what, can you hear the dog?
Yeah.
What am I going to do? In explaining that they agree that they were way too heavy-handed.
Yeah, they have. Because it was like, they were calling it like a tragedy porn. You know, after a while, like almost every person they brought up there, they had to, within like the first 30 seconds of their highlight reel, mention about how their mother was addicted to drugs, you know, their entire life. And you're like, you don't need that. And if there is truly a standout, inspiring story, feel free to tell it. But they were like really digging to find stuff on a lot of these guys.
Well, I mean, if you look at who plays professional football and what parts of the country they're from, I mean, chances are there's some sort of tragedy in their life.
Yeah.
Or sort of, certainly not a tragedy, then a hurdle that had to be overcome that other people don't have. So, I mean, just roll the dice. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you think? 75% of the people probably have had hardships growing up. So you're going to go 75% of the people. I mean, it gets to be completely old. And you know what? At a certain, and I know they're trying to humanize them, but I think that if you're a big enough football fan to watch the draft, that you are much more interested in finding out who these guys are on the field than finding out who they are off the field. Because I know that, like, if a team drafts someone outside of, you know, the first round, I don't know generally who the guy is. Or 50% of the time in the second round, I'm not, you know, I don't know the kid from Baylor that the Jets drafted. So show me him. Show me what's going on. Show me some highlights. Break it down.
And Fred, I want less sad, like, death stories, and I want more slow-mo videos of the fat guy jumping out of the pool and landing on his feet.
Yes. Worse. See, that's good.
Awesome.
That's you know, it's a feat of athleticism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, show him at the combine, lifting the, doing the bench press.
Right.
Get me all riled up.
Yeah. Well, you listen. At least that worked. Unlike the horse tournament that they had, they finally had something that worked. And something else that worked for ESPN is that they were smart and they said we're going to need content, and they put the fast forward button on getting this Jordan documentary on TV. And it seems like a lot of different companies are doing that as well. As a matter of fact, Disney Plus is going to be putting the new Star Wars movie, which came out on demand, I think about maybe like 3 weeks ago. It's going to be released on May the 4th. May the 4th be with you for free on Disney Plus if you are indeed a subscriber. On top of that, they're releasing what is called the Luke Skywalker Saga, including all of the Star Wars films along with Rogue One. The only one that's not going to be on there is Solo, a Star Wars story, but nobody really cares about that one. And so they're doing that. And so I like the fact that we're going to be getting more content because we truly needed it this time. And they're speeding up production or final production on some of the things that were already in the can that were going to be released later on in the year. On top of that, on May the 4th, they're going to be releasing that Mandalorian making of series, which I think is as long as the Mandalorian itself, but who cares? I watched the trailer and nerdgasm all over the place. So, and if you were a fan of old 90s and maybe late 80s, definitely 90s horror movies, HBO is developing a brand new series based on the Hellraiser movies. Any of you guys watch Hellraiser when you were a kid?
No, it seems corny.
Oh, no. That first Hellraiser was nuts. Clive Barker's a maniac. He's the guy who wrote that. He did Nightbreed and a bunch of other stuff. Like, that dude is, like, truly messed up in the head. And the first Hellraiser movie is one of those that was a legit scary movie that, for the first time in a while, maybe, like, Freddy Krueger was the last great, like, monster in a movie. They created Pinhead and the rest of the Cenobites, and those things were just terrifying. The first Hellraiser still holds up, so now they're doing a whole series on it, and to be quite honest, I probably won't watch it because the Hellraiser was scary and I didn't like that very much. But if you like something else that may be scary because I have not heard it yet, however Mike Lockhart in the studio has, that would be Terry Bradshaw dropped a country song yesterday. He wrote it because of the quarantine. It's called Quarantine Crazy. Now, one thing I do know is that I've heard his voice before because he was, I believe, the pineapple on The Masked Singer. I think at one point that they thought he was Bono, but they took it off and it ended up being Terry Bradshaw.
It was Paul McCartney, Rich.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, that they always predicted someone like that, and it ends up being, of course, a nobody from a reality show. But, of course, everyone loves Terry Bradshaw. Here he is, the star of the Cannonball Run, singing his country song, Quarantine Crazy.
To be patient with me, I'll slow it down and find some time, you'll see, to spend with you in these bundles of joy. Well, my wish came true, but it wasn't by choice. Now all this time with them has sure been a blessing.
He's got a good
just
voice.
Just hanging out together 24/7. Now it was fun for a week, I'll admit it, but my cabin fever's
very Buffett-esque.
It is a good song.
I don't like it, but it's not embarrassing. But I'll tell you this, it's a Buffett-esque. This is like Buffett's, I hate math.
Math sucks.
Yeah, Jimmy Buffett honestly has a song called Math Sucks.
Yeah, not good.
Yeah, he doesn't like it. He says, to hell with math, please. What do you want out of me?
Math sucks.
It does. It's something we can all relate to.
I hate this stuff so much. Math sucks.
This is like something, and this was on an adult album, right? This wasn't like part of a Sesame Street or something.
Oddly enough, he doesn't play this in concert. Can't someone figure that out.
You know what that song is to me?
Water.
Water poop. Yeah.
Oh, our friend.
Diarrhea. I mean, it's going to be in your head all day.
Yeah.
Of course. Diarrhea.
Brown water.
Okay, I'll stop it. Well, Jay Cutler, not, I mean, listen, on the court, or on the field, he might have been, you know, for the field, he was, you know, not that great and really didn't seem very motivated, but he seemed like a likable guy when he was on his reality show with his wife, Kristen Cavallari. Well, that is done. They filed legal documents to get divorced. However, if you take a look at the documents, which TMZ, of course, did, the reason they broke up, TMZ is saying that Kristen Cavallari alleges misconduct on the part of Jay Cutler and claims that's what triggered the divorce. She said Jay, quote, is guilty of such inappropriate marital conduct as renders further cohabitation unsafe and improper.
All right.
So she's asking for primary physical custody, and Jay wants to have visitation. He wants joint custody of their three kids as well. So this is one of those things that when they came out with the original tweet, it's got a picture of them walking away, we're lovingly divorcing, and then one day later, bam, you get the hammer. It doesn't seem like things are so great behind the scenes. Nobody knows what happens, but I'm sure TMZ will find out probably before it's all
who knows done. What goes on besides the behind the scenes of anyone's house, Rich.
That is true. So Jay Cutler is I'm just waiting for him to finally get that television gig that everyone was talking about he was going to have. Because now that, like him being, I guess, what Tony Romo was supposed to be, what network was he going to get signed to when he originally retired? Wasn't he all the talk that he was going to have? He's going to be like in the number two team or something on ABC or
not ABC. I want to say Monday Night Football, but until before Romo got it, right?
Romo's not on Monday Night.
Not Romo.
No, they weren't instantly going to give him Monday Night Football. He was going to get, or that's ESPN. He was going to be like on the second team on one of the networks, and I just thought it was hysterical because, like, who thinks of Jay Cutler as being someone who is like an entertaining guy who can carry a conversation.
Or that he cares enough about football to sit there and actually break it down.
Right. Even on that show, if you watched that Kristen Cavallari show, his whole character was just the guy who didn't care or try.
Yeah. I mean, that seems to encapsulate what we know about him.
In his career. Yes.
I mean, the guy's physical tools were like unbelievable.
Yeah.
But he just seemed to not care at all about what was going on the football field, hence his face.
Yeah, Smoking Jay Cutler was one of my favorite like internet memes. Where someone would put like a fake cigarette in his mouth, and it always looked like appropriate. It always looked like he was just like sucking on a just dragging. He's just I don't know. He's a guy that if they give him a TV gig, if it works, somebody knows something I don't know, because that right now just sounds like an absolute disaster. It's almost like the David Lee Roth.
There should just be a sitcom called Jake. And like all the action happens around him sitting in a chair.
He's got a new name, Jake. It's not Jay anymore. It's like he's like a cool guy character he's created.
He's Jake, and he just sits in a chair and has no lines. And an actual sitcom is going on around him.
He's just sitting there, like Joe Murray. Sitting there.
Then they'll be like at a diner, like they'll move to a diner, and then he'll just be sitting there, and everyone will be talking around him, and he'll just be sitting there.
But he's the glue to hold it all together, you know.
He's if it's not for his name and his presence, you would
right.
There's no purpose.
I like it though. Everything. He's the only thing. You can have any actor do anything, so long as he's there, it kind of joins the scenes together.
A couple and they're reading in bed, like Jay's just in the middle of them sitting there.
Yeah. I like that idea.
Because they want to pounce while the iron's hot. When Jay's in the news, they want to pounce on it.
Sure. But
they dare not give him any. Well, he'd be like the color commentary guy in Major League. Bob Uecker just going, what do you think? You
know? Yeah.
All right. That's why you're the best in the business.
By the way, I'm being told by our listeners on Twitter that you don't understand how entertaining Korean baseball is. You're truly missing out. I do know that, you know, the robot fans in the stand are a little creepy.
Yeah.
And that's weird enough to maybe keep my remote on it for, you know, a minute or two. But I don't. I mean, what's the difference? Is it the way it's presented?
Honestly, I'm thinking the camera shots are pretty much the same. The rules of the game are pretty much the same.
I guess announcers like spaz out and stuff, but
they do the games in English. They spaz out. That's good for maybe 5 minutes. That's good.
Yeah.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.